Finance Committee to order. Today's date, Wednesday, March 2nd. Welcome, everybody. Today, we have a couple of bills before us, actually four bills. We'll be calling upon the authors, and I see the first author is here, Senator Johnson. Senate File 3240, Senator Johnson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee. Thank you very much. Well, Senate File 3240 should give us some hope in the Ukrainian situation. If Roseau and Warroad can work together in figuring out a solution, there's hope for peace.
Please, you know, I didn't mind coming back, but I didn't think I was going to be confronted with that right away. You could at least give me a couple of days to work on that, and we'll have it here.
I've been waiting for you to come back just so I can bring that up.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
No, I appreciate that. So Senate File 3240 is an appropriation from the all-terrain vehicle account of natural resources to help improve 13 miles of ATV trails between Warroad and Roseau. It's an exciting opportunity there to expand the trail system in the hometown of Polaris and ATVing up there. And it's really an opportunity for the sportsmen's clubs to contribute some of their resources and whatnot to improve that trail system. I have several testifiers like to talk about this today. If we could probably start off with Miles today. Mr. Chair, and then we've got Ray Bowen from the ATV Association, and then Mayor Fabian is here too as well to lend some support and highlight this project.
Okay. Senator, who did you say your first one was?
Miles.
Can you hear me?
Miles. Okay. Oh, there you are.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Coming through clear.
Go ahead. Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Welcome. My name is Miles Hoganson. I'm with the Roseau Lake of the Woods Sportsman's Club and the North Star Trail Alliance. I'm a trail administrator for pretty much the county. What we have here is an abandoned rail bed that the snowmobile club purchased. They started the purchase, I think it was in 2009, and we haven't had any funds to be able to develop it. What it could be, and our plan is to, if we get appropriations, we would clean off the top, because what happens is when they took most of the rocks off, but there's 3 and 4 minus rocks out there that puncture tires and things like that, and people aren't able to ride like they should, and they just don't like riding down it because of that fact. So what we would do is we would clean the top off, level it out, clean up some crossings, make it more safe, and apply class 5 gravel down and then some chloride after that. This here eventually will be able to make a safer route to Beltrami State Forest, and that's what we're working on right now. So
for a point of clarity, it starts where and where does it end up? You said it ends up in a park. I mean, where's the starting point?
The starting point is, depending on if you're in Warroad, it starts right on the west side of town. If you're in Roseau, it's on the east side of town. Okay. And it goes all the way to,
all the way there.
Yeah.
Before we open it up for questions, I'll just make a note that we do have a quorum, and, also a note that these bills will be held over for possible inclusion. So, questions of the members? Any questions at all? Is there going to be a time when you come along and or not come along? You decided you want to mute yourself. There you go. Come along with a hard packed, asphalt at all, or you're not any plans for that in the future, or you don't have any interest in doing that?
No, we don't really have any interest of that right now.
Okay. All right. Members, any questions of the testifier? Seeing none, Senator Johnson, you have another one there, I think, by the sitting next to you. Please identify yourself, Mr. Bowen. And welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome back.
Yeah.
And welcome back to me too. I haven't been here for a couple of years. So as you know, with the COVID, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here today representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. And I just have a couple of quick comments. One, this is one of our major initiatives for this year, this particular trail. And we are pretty excited about doing some trail development in Northwest Minnesota and hope that this is just the start for Northwest Minnesota in terms of the trail development. So with that, I just want to let you know that we really support this project.
Very good. Members, any questions of Mr. Bone? Who's always been here for trails for many years.
Yes.
Good to see you again. Senator, you have somebody quite a bit younger than both of you sitting to your left. Would you introduce him as a testifier?
Mr. Chair, your eyes are starting to get a little glazed over, I think. This is former Representative Dan Fabian. You may recognize him.
Welcome, Representative. Welcome, Mayor, to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be here. And first, let me start out by saying thanks to Senator Johnson for bringing this bill forward. It really is a really good bill. I'm thankful to Ray Bone and ATVAM for the support that they have for this. And
Before you start, please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Dan Fabian. I'm the mayor of Roseau, Minnesota.
So, thank you. Welcome.
Okay. Greatest town on the face of the earth. And the proud home of Polaris Industries and a whole bunch of other really good stuff.
I'm sorry, have you got your mic on?
As far as I know, I do.
There you go.
Sorry. Right. Yep. So anyway, thanks to Senator Johnson and ATVAM and Ray Bowen for the work on this. And you saw Miles Hoganson and you heard him testify. Miles is a tireless worker for our riding sports industry up there. He is an amazing guy. He's driving the trail groomers for the snowmobiles. I was up in the Northwest Angles snowmobiling this weekend and he was there. The Edge Riders had their big event. And it was very well attended. Had one little minor glitch. I burnt a hole in the piston, but we got a good repair shop up there, so I'll take care of that. And the riding groups, the riding community up there is looking for this trail extension. It's a really, really good trail. I've ridden on it myself on a snowmobile, not very much on the ATV, but it's connecting Roseau and Warroad, and Senator Johnson said, we're working together on this, and we certainly hope that it moves forward. It's going to be a great connection, you know, to be able to get out to the Beltrami Island State Forest, to move back and forth between Warroad and Stop and Salo and stuff like that. So it's really cool. Okay. Thank you.
Talk about extensions beyond the rail?
Well, there's no talk with specifically to this one here, but we're very interested in expanding our ATV trails up there. I think that it's kind of a hidden jewel, the snowmobile industry and with Polaris and Arctic Cat up there and the trail systems that do exist for snowmobiles is pretty extensive. There's a lot of trails out in the Beltrami State Forest for ATVs, and we've worked on that over the years with the different clubs down in Grigland, Fortown, and Lake of the Woods and Roseau. So it's just another piece of the puzzle. And, you know, the interest in the riding sports is growing every year. And we want to be a player in that and a destination for that. Our hotels and cafes and gift shops appreciate the traffic.
That's what I was going to ask you if you know, what the numbers are. I know they were down. They were down for a long time, snowmobiles. And obviously with what we've had this last winter, that's got to certainly make a spike in the right direction. Have you seen a lot of growth? Were there some years there that you didn't have so much travel up there?
Well, there sure is a lot of interest. I can't address specifically the amount of growth and the number of units and the number of registrations and so forth. But I know that up in my part of the state, there's a tremendous interest in snowmobiling and ATVing. And the other thing is people need to understand too, with this trail, as I understand it, we're welcoming anybody to use the trail, you know, for any mode of transportation they have, whether it's a bicycle or walking or whatever. This is a truly unique trail that we're doing. So,
okay. Good.
Yep.
Good. Members, any questions?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Before I go any further, just for information, we do have a new face with us, Eric Spenwin. If you want to raise your hand over there, he's my new legislative assistant, replacing Will, and this is his first day, so we're expecting him to be able to answer all the questions when we get done here. We're going to have a little test after we get done. So we're going to have, some fun with that, but welcome to the committee. Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair.
You have with you before you, you have Senate file 2930. With regards to leaded gasoline contamination assessment appropriation, something that's been, I guess, around for a little bit of time. So go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, what this bill would do is appropriate a money, some money, and I haven't yet established exactly how much that would be, but it would be to actually let the city of Painesville hire an independent contractor to assess the remediation that has been done at the city of Painesville and also the city of Blaine, the city of Alexandria, and the city of Foley. And the reason those four cities are identified out of the about 5,000 plus gasoline leaks that we've had is basically we got notified by a news reporter that there was a there may be some issues, and really what we're trying to do is appease and ensure that the citizens of the state and citizens of these locales that their water's safe, there isn't any further issues, because right now there's somewhat of a lack of trust, especially in the city of Painesville, to the what has occurred out there in the remediation process. And this is just a, to it, I think what we're looking to do is try to calm the fears of that there may be still contamination ongoing, and that the process was good, and have a third party unconnected with MPCA, unconnected with the state, to take a look at it, just to review the reports that have been done, possibly sample some of the existing wells, and to ensure that the process is continuing to go down the right path. And so with that, I've got some additional comments, but I would prefer to go to the testifier, the city administrator of Painesville, and then make further comments after that, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Senator. Yeah, I believe he's present online. Is he?
I believe yes, he's.
I am here. Tarek El-Rafai, city administrator in Painesville.
Welcome to the committee.
Welcome.
Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Howe, for giving me the chance to present. I do have some slides. I don't know if I share my screen or you put them up on your end. So let me know what you prefer.
I think if you want to put them, you should be able to share. Please go ahead. There it is.
All right, hold on. I got to do the slideshow first. One moment, excuse me. All right, you see that?
We do.
All right, let's see here. All right. First of all, this is something that has gone on. Do you see the screen where I have the bill from 2015 up?
Yes.
All right. In 2015, there's another bill that aimed to deal with this issue. And as you can see there, there's a company called Terracon that has been providing reports since 1990 on the monitoring of the wells. So this is the bill that was sponsored in 2015, but let me go back and give you some brief background, and then we'll get back to where we are today. I won't go through all these points, but I think it's important to kind of highlight some of them. First of all, there was benzene identified in the former Midtown service station site in Painesville in 1985. The tanks were removed in 1989. And then in 1997, so several years later, the benzene was identified in city well number 4 and later city well number 3, which were the primary wells for the water in the city of Painesville. There were several attempts made at removing this contamination. Of course, the contamination was not successful. Wells 3 and 4 were discontinued, and wells 7 and 8 were new wells that were brought online to supplement the water loss from closing down those two wells. It's also important to note that well 4 was used to discharge, or water was taken from that well to discharge into the Crow River under a DNR permit at a rate of 5.2 million gallons per year. And the MPCA identified additional sites for excavation to try to eliminate this over the years. And there were increasing levels of contaminants identified in other wells. Citing the cost, in 2012, MPCA abandoned the plans to excavate the site, which was, you know, hopefully would have been a better remedy at the time. And they continued to pump City Well Number 4 to try to mitigate that contamination spreading effort. There were mounting wells installed around town. And in 2015, evidence was pointing towards drinking water aquifer, or there was one drinking water aquifer between the underneath the city of Painesville. And it was only a matter of time before the contamination reached the other wells. So based on that, the city in 2015 was requesting a $2.5 million grant to upgrade the water treatment plant and install a volatile organic compound plant, a VOC plant, to help ensure that the water in the city of Painesville was safe for use. So in 2016, the city of Painesville received a grant for $1.83 million to install this plant. It covered the entire cost. However, it did not cover the maintenance costs. And in 2021, the city had to replace the VOC filtration membrane at a cost of approximately $170,000. These membranes were supposed to last 20 years. However, because of the contamination of the content of VOC, it only lasted 7 to 8 years instead. So there's going to be an ongoing maintenance cost as a result of this. As you can see here, this is the water treatment facility in Painesville. On the right, that is the VOC plant that was put in 2016. This is a map from the MPCA showing where the contamination is. And of course, the main facility was right here, the station that the tanks were leaking from, and it spread to other parts of the city. The main wells of the city at the time were right around here. And of course, subsequently, there were mounting wells installed around town to monitor this on an ongoing basis, which is still going on today, by the way. This is the main site of the service station. As you can see, monitoring wells were installed to monitor on a regular basis. This is in a residential area. And all over town, you can see monitoring wells at different locations throughout town. This is one of the newer wells that was had to be put in. So far, this well, there is no contamination. It is a very successful or good well for the city. More monitoring wells around town. And last photo here was the main well at the time that had to be shut down because it was contaminated. This is a report from Terracon, the company that does the annual monitoring for MPCA, and it just shows you how the plume has spread over the years, and you know, efforts to contain it were not successful at that time. And that's all I have for you right now. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I do have one question. When you go back to your presentation,
yes,
I underlined the word volatile organic compounds. Can you tell me what that is, or should I ask the MPCA when they get up here? I'm not sure.
I prefer you ask them because I am not a water contamination expert.
Okay, that's fine. Members, any questions of the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up to testify would be Assistant Commissioner for Land Policy, Kirk Kodelka, and Remediation Division Director, Jamie Wallerstedt. Assistant Commissioner, welcome to the meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Adelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And I work on land issues, including our remediation programs. We also, as you mentioned, have our remediation director available if there are questions to get into more details. But I just have a few quick thoughts. I want to thank the committee for the time and the author for meeting with us yesterday on this bill. I want to share a few thoughts and information. Want to just highlight the four communities that are mentioned in the bill: the Painesville, Blaine, Foley, and Alexandria. We have want to make sure folks understand that there is safe drinking water for all these communities. It has been sampled and it meets the Department of Health's health-based values for petroleum products. So these are wells that have been monitored, and I want to make sure that it's clear that folks are drinking safe water, because that is our mission at the MPCA and the community's missions, provide safe drinking water to its residents. Specifically for Painesville, MPCA and Department of Health have been sampling the current city wells since 2002 and has shown no detection of contamination from petroleum products in those wells. As mentioned, we have we have wells in between the contamination and those city wells and have not seen contamination, and has no data to show that the plume is moving at this point. Blaine did have contamination in the well in 1999 that was over the health-based value set by the Department of Health, and immediately this agency's worked to provide treatment and installed it on their system so that they are providing safe drinking water to those residents. In Foley, this is not an issue with the municipal water, but private wells. And this is a situation where we did work and find that there were four private wells impacted by a petroleum leak. Three of the wells have been replaced or treatment provided to them to continue to ensure that safe drinking water is there. In Alexandria, we do have safe drinking water, again, going to the residents. It's monitored by MPCA and the Department of Health. There are some petroleum products found at very low amounts in two of the wells that we are continuing to work on with our agencies. As noted in the testimony earlier, there's a lot of work that goes into all of our sites, and we take this very seriously, and there are investigations and actions to address these sites that are occurring or have occurred. Some of these sites still have active investigations going on. So we do have some questions about whether this is duplicative of work already being done. We as an agency prioritize work based on a number of risk factors, and this legislation creates and places other projects in front of those and sends resources to that area. Resources that we think may be better spent on communities that have exceedances of health-based values or other projects, such as the Look Back program, where we are looking back at gas additives and with additional new science and understanding to go back to decisions that were made decades ago to make sure that we're still providing safe drinking water to these communities. We think that we can accomplish a lot of what the goals of this bill is through additional conversations with the community about our work. We're always more than happy to meet with communities, whether it's these four communities or others, to answer any questions they may have about investigations undertaken in their area or potential actions taken. And we believe that could answer a lot of the questions that have been raised by this legislation without the additional expense. We also have questions on whether it's the intent of the legislature to create a precedent where providing this type of additional consultant review for other parties that request them because difference of opinion with MPCA's decisions, whether it's with the petroleum remediation sites, all contaminated sites, or controversial projects that may include air or water permits. We are, we are a little concerned about, will this pull additional dollars away from addressing and investigating sites that where we have known contamination and exceedances. So those are some of the thoughts. We do appreciate the comments and the author's comments, as we will work with them to find a number to help get an estimate of what the number would be for the bill, a cost estimate. And so we do appreciate those ongoing conversations. And thank you, Chair and committee members, for the time.
Mr. Kudelka, please talk to me a little bit about the Alexandria one. I'm somewhat familiar. I think it is from a spill from many years ago. Is that correct? Can you tell me when that happened and how many approximate wells that you've drilled over the years to check on the aquifer contamination?
Mr. Chair and committee members, there is a number of pieces, and so I'll go on a high level, but you're right. There are a number of petroleum leaks from various sites, whether those are gas stations or we have 10 sites currently open, or the Magellan Terminal, which has impacted private wells in the city. And so we have worked in that case to be able to provide safe drinking water to those residents through extensive monitoring. But there are a number of sites that are under investigation and sites that we've already taken action, whether it's removing contamination or other types of efforts to continue to move forward. We'd be more than happy to talk more in depth. There are just given them the sheer number of sites at a future date to go into more detail.
I happen to have a very experienced well driller that has contacted me several times over the past 3-4 years, at least with regards to that one. I know the one in Painesville has certainly been around for a while. We've been talking about that one. Foley, not quite so familiar with that. But he claims that plume is still moving towards the city wells in Alexandria and is very concerned about it. And I don't know if you've been talking to the city of Alexandria or been talking to anybody there lately about that. Has there been any discussions more recently, or is it something that you're willing to have again?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we're more than happy to have conversations. We are MPCA and the Department of Health are having conversations with the cities on some other issues right now that we're looking to address. So we'd be happy to talk about petroleum sites in addition to those conversations.
Okay. Members, any questions? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to continue to question how much time you've had to read the OLA report that just came out last month on petroleum remediation program. But I just pulled out a couple of high points of that summary. For one thing, I was surprised to find out that the MPCA does not directly investigate petroleum releases or cleanup. They actually hire environmental consultants that are usually hired by the people that are responsible for the leak or the contamination to perform those cleanup activities. And now, in order to be considered an environmental consultant, you have to register with the Petro Fund, the Petro Board. And so in order for those consultants to meet the requirements to be considered an environmental consultant, here are the four items that they have to meet. One, they have to have liability coverage, so they have to have a bond. They have to agree to abide by the laws. They have to be available. Their records have to be available for inspection. And number four, they have to sign a statement saying that each claim they submit for payment is accurate. Pretty low standard. So I think any one of us could go out and become an environmental consultant and do the cleanup of these positions, these situations. And so nowhere in here does the Petro Fund Board look at the qualifications, the technical qualifications of these people that are out there doing these cleanup. And according to state law, these consultants determine, or with the MPCA, to determine if this is a low potential risk or a high potential risk. Now, if it's a low potential risk, it's by state law that they're supposed to use the passive bioremediation program, where the organisms in the earth eat the contamination. Which I know happens as a fire marshal and a fire investigator. I took many samples and forgot to freeze them, and the bioorganism in the earth ate my contamination, so I couldn't prove arson. So I learned that the hard way. But you know, the idea here is we are basing that these risks are been nullified or taken care of by a third party that is getting paid either by the people that contaminated the space or by the folks that have a direct relationship with the state of Minnesota and the MPCA. I believe that what I'm concerned about is that if these issues have been raised, Many of these citizens in these communities are concerned about their drinking water. I think that spending a little bit of money to have an independent consultant to go out and take a look at these sites to ensure that they're not contaminated and that the process is actually working to clean it up is a small amount to pay. I really don't want to be gone from here 10 years from now and not end up with a big problem and find out that we have a bunch of increased leukemia cases because benzene is directly tied to leukemia. And I don't think anyone has been taking a look at and seeing if we have increase of that, those cancers in these sites. So I'll rest for questions.
Senator Howe, I do see that you don't have any cost in the bill here. Do you have any idea what that would be, or is this something you're still working on?
I'm still working on that. We've been in contact with a couple of consultants. They're working on to figure out exactly what those costs will be, and I'll be continuing to work with the MPCA to figure out exactly what that would cost to have one consultant coordinate with the four cities and do a study or a review of the processes.
Very good. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask if, it seems that this is a situation where we do not see from records that we are in need of this, but we need to figure out ultimately, like Senator Howe is proposing here, whether or not this is happening. And according to the agency, we have other sites that we are actually not investigating because we don't have the funding to do this. And I would like to ask the chair if we have a plan to review some of the findings from the OLA report, because I think they are connected and we can connect this report to some of the issues that we're talking about in this bill.
Thank you. Senator, do you have any comments about that?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Ray. This report just came out in February. And it's just timely that this hearing came up. And I think there are a number of things that we have to look at, especially with the way it's currently set up, that we need to address when it comes to petroleum remediation and the current program. Because I believe that this OLA report raises a number of questions of whether we're doing due diligence.
So thank you, Senator. And Senator Torres Ray, just know that I did actually review the OLA with the auditor and have a pretty good grasp on what their findings have been. But I think this is something that we have to move forward to. Is that if you're asking me if I have the money or it's been budgeted, of course I don't have a target, but it's something worth certainly looking at. And I think a consultation between the city leaders of the three towns that are on the bill here should continue, so we can come up with an idea. And I think at the same time, I think the MPCA should be involved in those discussions as well. And but I think that's something that can happen here in the real quick future, I guess. I would like to see something at least looked at and decided here. So have you got any further questions at all? Senator Eaton, welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome back to you.
Yeah.
My question, I'm a little confused. I don't understand if there's actual contamination right now verified. And I don't know why we're focusing on these few cities instead of all 145 that were listed in the original lawsuit. And why is Painesville in charge of the remediation for all four cities? And I mean, it's a confusing bill to me.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chair and Senator Eaton. The reason that Painesville is they were, of course, they happen to be in my my district, and I'm more familiar with them, and they agreed to be the coordinating piece with all four cities to make it happen. They volunteered. They are probably more concerned than the other three, but and they volunteered to do the work to actually coordinate with the other three cities and to direct that. That's the reason. If Foley would have been in my district or Alexandria would have been in my district, I could have picked any one of those, but I actually had meetings with Painesville. They are very concerned. And so when we thought about doing the four cities, they were more than anxious to try and push this thing along. So that's the reason. And they're not in charge of the remediation. They're just going to hire the consultant and funnel the money to the consultant to do the study of the four cities. So they're not, I wouldn't say they're in charge. I think they're just going to be in charge of the purse.
Senator Eaton-Paul. Okay. Members, any other questions? I think if there's none, I certainly would like to encourage everybody to look at the OLA report. I mean, everybody gets a copy of that. And a lot of times it gets a little in an area where you probably don't understand, but you get to the recommendation part and the findings, and it's pretty clear that if there's any questions at all, they usually do a tremendous job of coming up with ways to resolve issues and review issues that may have not been done properly. So again, a work in progress. Any further questions, members? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Howell. We'll be laid over.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity.
Next up on the agenda and maybe Mr. Kudelka, if you're going to be around before the end of the meeting or till the end of the meeting, I can talk to you about the volatile organic compounds. So just offline is fine. Just so I know what that means. Next up is the Senate File 2768, Senator Rood. We're going to talk about salt applicator program establishment. We've certainly needed a lot of that here this last few months. And our cars show that, actually. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank Senator you, Mr. Rood. Chair. Senator Rood, this is Senate File 2768. I think a lot of you are familiar with this. This is a bill that we've been working on for a few years now, and we've been really trying to get it over the finish line right now. A lot of the committee members here have worked very hard on it, and I know Senator Eaton, you have over the years. You know, Minnesota has currently 50 chloride impaired lakes, and an additional 75 are on the cusp. Just one small amount of de-icer, a tablespoon or a teaspoon, permanently pollutes 5 gallons of water, and the de-icer cannot be removed. And you see all over the roads, the salt, and in our apartment buildings, the salt. And what we're attempting to do is really educate people. And I think in the last couple of years, even though we have not passed the bill about the liability, we've seen a great effort to educate people. I myself in Brainerd took the snowplow de-icer class, although I tell folks they didn't let me drive, but it was very, very interesting. Our snowplows are incredibly high tech with temperature gauges, and they can tell exactly when they should put that de-icer on the roads. And with the education, our counties in greater Minnesota have seen a great reduction in cost because they have used so much less. I hate to say that that's one of the driving issues to get this done, but it really is. It is so much more cost effective to use the salt when and at timing and that it needs to be put down. So with that, what we're trying to do is put together education. It's voluntary certification for our salt applicators. And I have two folks with me that have worked on this very diligently. I have Ms. Fortune and Ms. Nissen. You'd like to come forward? Oh, Connie's virtual, sorry.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, I didn't have my mic on. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Sue Nissen. I'm a Minnesota water steward and a citizen volunteer with Stopover Salting. Senator Rood, thank you so much for, again, championing this bill. It is really important to Minnesota. And we think at Stopover Salting, we're a citizen group, and we think this bill is good for clean water. It's good for infrastructure. It's good for our commercial salt applicators and for maintaining public safety with a lot less salt. And we can do this. This spoon that we're both wearing demonstrates the pollution power of a small amount of de-icer. And as Senator Rood said, it just takes one teaspoon to pollute this amount of water to the EPA standard for toxicity for aquatic life. And removal is expensive and impractical, so it's becoming a permanent part of our waters. And the result is our fresh waters are just plain saltier and saltier. And we don't see that because dissolved in water, it's clear, the water's clear. So we don't see the salt, but the data is in. And as Senator Rood said, we've got 50 water bodies impaired. We've got 75 more at the tipping point. We've got upward salt trends in our drinking water monitoring wells and in our groundwater. And in Minnesota, we use about 400,000 tons a year, and that is a lot of teaspoons of salt, and it's not all needed. So Stopover Salting volunteers, what we do is we spend a lot of time in our communities, and we frequently talk with commercial applicators and the property managers. Many are not trained, we know that, in their best practices, and overwhelmingly there is this pressure to oversalt because of the belief that visible salt on a property provides protection for slip and fall lawsuits. The combination of those two is driving over application. And we also find that most applicators are acutely aware of the destructive side effects of the de-icers. And they tell stories about how much they love their lakes, they love to fish, their frustration over infrastructure damage really gets them going, and replacing dead landscaping every year also really gets them going. However, at the end of the day, applicators need to protect their small businesses, and currently over-applying de-icers does just that. So the opportunity for the liability protection is an incentive for the commercial applicators to enroll in MPCA's highly effective smart salting training, which Senator Rood's taken, SOSers have taken. It's a virtual program. It teaches science-based best practice. And when we attend those trainings, we see applicators return to their companies with a lot of enthusiasm because they've learned so many ways that they can reduce de-icer use yet maintain public safety. They report 40 to 60% reductions after training. So we have a vision for Minnesota that every teaspoon of de-icer counts in a positive way. And this bill is a real and necessary step in that direction. And thank you so much. Please support Senate File 2768. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. And yes, you're right. It is one of those disappearing things. One of the things that are in the water that we don't know about. Easy to overlook, kind of like the garbage cans at the end of the driveway. The garbage just goes away. And that's the end of it. And that's not necessarily how it works. So I see we have a fee here and a liability, Senator. I believe the committee, we're going to want to send this off to the Civil Law Committee.
Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal note. We have, the MPCA has done the training by grants so far,
yeah.
And the grants will be ending, and so they will need funding for the training program.
Sure.
And this does, because of the liability section, need to go to civil law.
Okay. Any questions, Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Rood for her perseverance in getting this bill moving forward. It's been a long battle, and it's, I think it's crucially important. So thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to express my support for this bill, and thanks to Senator Rood for moving it along. I have several constituents who have been leaders on this matter as well, so appreciate that this bill is back with us and seems to be moving along. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, if I could maybe one of the pages come, we have some spoons for you today.
Oh, okay. Senator Eichhorn's got a question first.
Sure. And census is going to civil law. I'll reserve my comments for later on the liability portion of it. There's definitely some concern there still. My first question would be to Senator Rood, and then I will have one for the PCA. If somebody from the PCA is here, I'm curious about the fee portion. Why not government employees? Why just the commercial applicators? I've seen situations, and even an MCEA's letter, they do call out large scale roads and roadways as part of the issues as well. So why don't we have government employees do this as well?
Okay. Who would like to take?
That was for Senator Rood.
Senator Rood.
Then I have one for the PCA after that question.
Senator Rood.
I think they have the answer to that question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And thank you, Senator. My understanding is that currently municipal and other government employees do take this training. However, this would purely be an incentive. The liability piece would be an incentive for the commercial applicators. So this program does cover all types of salt applicators, both government and otherwise. And there have been trainings in all of those. But they already have legal protection elsewhere in statute.
Follow up on that, Mr. Chair. I would respectfully disagree that they all get training. I've seen several situations where you can pull up behind somebody in a truck that's doing salting, and it's, you know, they're putting more than a person would ever put on in their own driveway or their own sidewalk, and you can drive up behind some and it's just a little trickle of salt and you wonder if it's even close to enough. So I think it would be important, if we're going to have commercial applicators do this, that we consider saying that government employees also have to do this. If it's good for the goose, it should be good for the gander. On the fee, I see it's up to $350. I appreciate that discretion. I see in the fiscal note, the assumption is the PCA is going to automatically start at $350 per trainee. Is that the case? Do you plan to start lower than that? Where do you see the agency starting there? Is it just going to be the $350? It certainly could be lower.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Eichhorn, thank you for the question. Our understanding is that in the bill, this would be a flat $350. So that would be where we would set it. That is close to or around our costs for this program. We would prefer to have more of a discretion for whatever fee would cover the costs fully, but $350 is workable for the agency.
Follow up on that, and then another question, Mr. Chair. That's unfortunate to hear you're going to start at $350. I think there's a lot of small businesses that, you know, John Smith with ABC snow plowing might do some salting, and if he wants to do this, you might be pricing some people out of the market, which I think is unfortunate. I hope there's a mechanism that the agency can find to help some of those folks that might be small business take the program. I do appreciate that Senator Rood has this as a voluntary program. My question for the agency would be, is there anything in current law where you could see the agency go through rulemaking, making this a mandatory thing? I have no issues as long as this continues to be voluntary, but we've seen too many times where the agency takes over the place of what the legislature should do and move forward with something. I just want to make sure that it is not the intent and you don't have the authority to turn this into a mandatory program after the fact.
Mr. Johnson, and also the question I would have is, how many trainings have you as the MPCA participated in so far?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to address Senator Eichhorn's question first, I am not sure on our authority in that regard. I will have to get back to you on that. However, it is not our intent to make this a mandatory program. It has been a very popular program, and we are happy with its outcomes as a voluntary program so far. And to that point, Mr. Chair, I believe there's been over 2,000 folks certified since 2020 when the program was officially established, and more before that, I believe, but I'll have to get back with any specific numbers.
Sure. Follow up and last question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So I appreciate that. I did want to get on the record that you don't plan to turn it into a mandatory thing. If you do, I would expect that you would come before the legislature to do that instead of doing it through a rulemaking process. The last one's a hypothetical, just because I do have some concern about the liability piece. I know that'll be hashed out in civil law. But I'm just curious to know, for say, for example, somebody gets their salt applicator license or certification, and then it gets revoked. What about the property owner that in good faith thought this person they hired was certified, and then mid-season maybe they got their certification revoked? Does that property owner, with the understanding that they thought they hired this person that was covered, do they still have protection? And I realize that's maybe better for the civil law committee, but that's, I won't go any farther down the rabbit hole of liability, but that is an area of concern I do have that if you can address here, I would like to know, since I don't sit on civil law.
I think if you can go ahead and address it, but it is a question for civil law. I think if need be, if you can't, that's fine. I think we can get to that question in civil law. There's.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, was this question for the agency?
Whoever wants to, if the agency can answer it, or Senator Rood, whoever wants to take it.
Senator Rood.
I don't think we have any mechanism to revoke somebody's certification. I don't. You know, I think that's just a civil law, and that's where that question belongs.
Sure.
It appears there was a method to revoke somebody's license or their applicator deal if they weren't following best practices. I got to find it in the bill here. It appeared that the Pollution Control Agency could, as a penalty, may on 3.11, commissioner may revoke or decline a new or renew a certification of a certified commercial applicator if the applicator violates the section or rules adopted under the section. So I'm less concerned about if the person that gets it taken away, then, you know, what happens to the person who in good faith thought that they had that. And if you're willing to follow up with me on that later, after you've had discussion with civil law, I'm fine with that. But I do have a curiosity there.
Very good.
It's because as a property owner, I do hire people to plow and shovel, and this is something I would be interested in, and I'd want to make sure I was protected if I hired one of those folks.
Exactly. I think that'll be answered in that next committee. There's no question. Certainly good concerns. I don't know if there's any further testimony at all. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too have great support for this bill. Senator Ruth, thank you so much for your efforts. I think the education campaign that you have engaged all of us in has been very, very successful. I have seen it, you know, in my own neighborhood and traveling around, that people are really understanding the importance of controlling the amount of salt that we put in the roads and sidewalks and everything. So you have my full support. I am wondering if, I guess it's a question, it's a technical question, is this bill moving by itself, or is it going to be moving for possible inclusion? I would like to see it moving by itself, just because it has tremendous support, I think, around the state of Minnesota, and it would be a very good message from the Environment Committee.
Senator, it has to move from here to the civil law. And Senator Rood, I don't know if you have any questions about that, whether it should go forward by itself. I certainly don't have a problem with that.
It would be nice to go by itself. I think, you know, we have to get through the civil law committee first to see how we end up there.
That answer your question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Senator Rue, for considering to move the bill by itself. It will be great to vote for it. Thank you.
And we do have Connie Fortin would like to testify. I believe she was on the list, wasn't she?
Yes.
I apologize for missing. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and Senators. My name is Connie Fortin. I'm a senior project manager for Bolton and Mink. I've spent 25 years working on chloride reduction strategies. I've developed and taught the MPCA Smart Salting Certification courses, and I've written all the manuals that accompany those classes. I've been in front of about 20,000 winter maintenance professionals talking about the huge chloride problem Minnesota faces and explaining ways to integrate science into winter maintenance so we can reduce salt. I'm viewed as a leader in chloride reform across America. MPCA is also viewed as a leader in chloride reform across America with their Smart Salting Training Program. We are highly respected across the nation. We are number one at addressing this issue and putting together a plan to educate that industry and move forward together. It's time for our elected officials to help us with the private side of winter maintenance, reduce their salt use. The training program, funding for it, the liability legislation, it's greatly needed. Minnesota is the most progressive state in understanding the chloride problem. Last year, the MPCA released a statewide chloride management plan. In this plan, it asks every single person in Minnesota to use less salt. We're the first state in the nation to do this, and all the cold weather states are watching us. Minnesota has reduced our salt use, and I do agree with the comment that more training across the board is needed, but we're making progress. And some good news from the United States Geological Survey is that in the years from 1990 to 2010, when they looked at the groundwater in Minnesota, our rate of chloride contamination was really high. And that huge elevation went all the way from Minnesota off to the east coast of the US. When they continued their monitoring in 2010 to 2020, Minnesota's rate of groundwater contamination had flattened out. And I think it's largely because of the training program. Now, Heinz Steffen and his colleagues at the St. Anthony Falls Labs studied who's using the salt, and they looked in our seven most populated counties. And here in the metro area, it's a pretty even distribution of salt use between MnDOT, the cities, the counties, and the private sector. So we could roughly say the private sector are putting down about 25% of the salt that we're getting in our water. Okay, we've had a lot more success working with cities, counties, and in the state to reduce their salt use. They're easier to find, they're easier to get to class, they have more funding, and they are doing a better job of it. So we need some sort of tool, some help to get the private side into training and an incentive for them to follow best practices. I think it was already mentioned today that if we look by any restaurant, the pharmacy, the grocery store, we will see lots of extra salt, probably right out in front of the Senate building. More salt than's needed for safety. And I can tell you that after training people for the last 15 years, they act either out of ignorance or fear. Okay? And our training class can resolve the ignorance. We can give them the tools, but it cannot get rid of the fear of these lawsuits. So I'm really asking you today to help us. I thank you for your good work on this. We're counting on you to protect Minnesota's water, and we have 10,000 reasons why we should pass this legislation. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you so much for the testimony and your work on this. Members, any questions of the testifier or any of the testifiers still there? Is anybody else in attendance that would like to testify on this bill? Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your support today, and I look forward to having another conversation in civil law.
Would you like to move your bill?
I would, sir.
Senator Rood moves that Senate File 2768 be passed and re-referred to the Senate Civil Law Committee. Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Same sign. Passes off to civil law. Thank you, members. I don't think there's anything before the committee at all, so we stand adjourned.